are.
Isn't common sense supposed to be common? The struggle is real, my friends. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
What my dad taught me was to be a gentleman and to treat women with respect. And that has to do with being a gentleman and recognizing differences in sex roles. Because one of the things that's happened is that traditional masculinity, the idea that it is a man's job to protect women, this is one of our jobs as human beings, as men, to protect women. The feminist movement doesn't like that. Well, then you can't blame us for not protecting women if you don't want us to protect women. Like, I want to protect women. I think men should protect women. I think one of the reasons God put man on earth is to protect women. Okay, well, then it is incumbent on me to protect women. But if you're telling me that I can't even open a door for a woman because this is somehow an offense to her honor, and that if I say that it's man's job to protect women, that this is somehow reinforcing gender stereotypes, then don't come whining to me when bad stuff happens.
Hi there, that was Ben Shapiro. Love it. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Glad to have you aboard. And this is a special show dedicated to men, actually. You're going to love this. And this hour, I have a special guest that I'll introduce in just a moment. In the next hour, we'll be taking your calls. I want you to share how you feel about masculinity, about fatherhood, about maybe your concern moving forward, what it's like to be a guy in this great land of ours, because I really want you to share your experiences. It's great to hear from you. And so be ready for that and last hour of the show today. I want to waste no time in getting to this guest. We had him on. It seemed like it was just a little bit ago. Welcome to the show, Dr. Warren Farrell. How are you?
I'm so glad to be with you again. I had such an enjoyable time last time.
Me too. And the audience did too, by the way. You've written so many books on just about everything you can imagine. Couples communication, women can't hear what men don't say, and father and child reunion. Also, economic and career issues, why men earn more, and on child custody, like father and child reunion was. And so you've written a lot of books. The Why Men Are the Way They Are, I love that, and The Boy Crisis. Which is your latest one that just came out in March. And this is, I think what you have to say, Dr. Farrell, is so important in your study of men and things that probably men would love to be able to say but don't know how. And so that's why you have the books. And I love that. And I also think that you you really have been at this for a very, very long time. And I think you started out kind of diametrically different, maybe on the whole feminism thing. I'm not quite sure. I should probably ask you that, to how you feel about men's role in the world, that it's kind of an interesting, you've had a long, interesting career, because you came to prominence in about the 70s, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Yes. Late 60s. I was on the board of directors of the National Organization for Women in New York City and spoke all around the world, I suppose, as the leading male feminist in the world. Mm-hmm. And was very supportive, and to some extent still am very supportive. But the part of feminism I will always support is the expansion of opportunities for women, getting women into multiple types of sports, which they weren't in when I was growing up. And I think that's expanded women in many ways. Just the focus on female empowerment has been very good up to a point. But where we made our mistake in a number of areas. One mm-hmm. was focusing so much on women's freedom that when it came to women having children, we said, oh, women should have the right to have children without, having fathers. And mm-hmm. at the beginning, I thought, well, all right, that's women's freedom to raise children without fathers. Probably okay. But then I began doing the research on that and found that the boys and girls that were raised with minimal or no father involvement were doing not badly, they were doing terribly. Mm. But the boys were doing disastrously. Mm-hmm. And so I started bringing this up to my fellow board members at mm-hmm. NOW, and it was like I went from being an angel to, like, are you for us or against us?
Wow.
And my attitude was, wait a minute, I'm for children. Girls, by the way, are half the children. And boys, doing as well as possible. And if the evidence is showing us that they need fathers, then we need to pay attention to that. well, we're going to lose now membership if we make it, you know, if we start inhibiting or if we start suggesting that, you know, that the women who want to be single mothers shouldn't be single mothers so quickly without, you know, really having a father involved. And I said, I support women's freedom 100%, but the support for women's freedom has to stop the moment a woman makes a free choice to have children, because then that's a free choice to put the children's interest before your own interest.
Amen.
And so that statement and the follow-up research I did when, you know, the research since that point in time has proven maybe 1,000 times over that children need their fathers. That is, the children that have minimal or no father involvement do worse in 70-plus different areas. Girls do worse also, but it's not as intensely negative for girls as it is for boys. And so that the research in that area has probably cost me somewhere between $30 and $40 million to say that, but I really felt that it was so important that that not be skipped over, that led me to doing the Boy Crisis book.
Wow. You're currently the chair of the commission to create a White House council on boys and men. Are they in crisis? Do you feel like it's a crisis?
Yes. I'm a person who is very cautious with words like crisis. Mm-hmm. It takes a high bar for me to use
sure.
words like that.
Sure.
And so, but when I found that boys were doing, in all 56 developed nations, they were doing worse than girls on every single academic subject on average, but especially on reading and writing, which are the two biggest predictors of success among academic subjects, that got my attention. When I looked at mental health issues and saw that, you know, boys, for example, at the age of 10, boys and girls commit suicide very minimally at that age, mm-hmm. but when they do, it's about equal. At the ages of 10 to 14, it's twice as much for boys as it is for girls. At the ages of 15 to 19, four times as much. At the ages of 20 to 25, it is almost five times as much. And so I began to see, wow, something here is happening with boys' mental health. And then I started looking at boys' physical health. And for the first time since we've been keeping tabs on these things, boys' male life expectancy has gone down. Our daughters, women's, has remained the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not so great for women either. But it's among women and boys that don't have, that have a lack of father involvement, the research is showing that predicts a shorter life expectancy. And this is, this is major academic journals that are showing this. As Pediatrics in 2017 found that the children that have minimal father involvement by the age of 9 and a half, their life expectancy is predicted to be shorter than 14% shorter than it is when they have father involvement. So that's the average between sisters and brothers. But when you separate out girls and boys, you find that boys' life expectancy is yet again 40% shorter than their sisters. And so, and then we go into the mass shooters.
Mm-hmm.
I started studying the mass shooters and found that more than 90% of the mass shooters since Columbine have been dad-deprived boys. So when I ran for governor of California, I started, talking to prison populations, and found that from the administrators and the judges that more than 90% of the male prisoners were dad-deprived boys. Then looked at ISIS recruits, the same figure with ISIS recruits, except the difference there was that the girls, much smaller percentage of ISIS recruits that are girls and boys, but among that smaller percentage, both the girls and boys had a lack of father involvement. And so this really, helped me understand that, it made me ask the question, what is there that fathers do
mm-hmm.
that leads to, such positive outcomes? And also, the single moms that I dated between my first marriage and the marriage that I've mm-hmm. been in with the woman I've been with for the last 25 years and I'm married to, she was a single mom also when I met her. And the single moms I dated, they were all, that the word they used most frequently was overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started saying, listen, if we have overwhelmed moms, undervalued dads, and children who are doing terribly without their dads, doesn't that give a hint as to what
you
the solution
think.
Is?
Yeah, you would think. It's common sense.
Well, duh.
Yeah. Captain Obvious, yes. And
yes, exactly, Captain Obvious.
And what drives me crazy is that I've seen a woman power movement like no other. I was even reading a review on a new movie coming out for kids, and one of the main questions people were asking was, yes, but does the movie show women empowered? And I just went, wait, this is getting so out of hand. We have this cause to do this, and I'm not quite sure why, and then to devalue the boys and call them, you have toxic masculinity. You're not allowed to show that part of you. You're not allowed to be empowered. Only the girls. And I thought, man, we're in trouble. We're in trouble.
We are in deep trouble this way. And here's the challenge with this. The toxic masculinity accusation is coming at the same time as male privilege. And so you have, since the Boy Crisis book came out, maybe I've had 100 letters from parents saying, you know, my son is going to school, and in the 7th, 8th grade, he's learning that, you know, you're a male, you have male privilege, it's women's time to speak up and your time to shut up. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's learning that masculinity is toxic. And so he's learning that what is toxic about masculinity? Well, one of the things is that men don't express their feelings and share what's hurting them, and so they keep it all to themselves, and then it's a volcano that builds up, and then they explode. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my son tries to, you know, I'm getting in these letters, my son tries to express his feelings, and he's told he's mansplaining. So he feels damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, he's told that, you know, women are equal, but they somehow or other, the average woman doesn't share the risk for sexual rejection equally to boys. They do it by option, but not by obligation or expectation. And so he's then expected to take those risks of rejection, but he's told if he goes too quickly and expresses his feelings so that he feels inside of himself, he will be considered a sexual harasser. But if he doesn't go quickly enough, he's considered a wimp.
I don't know how they win.
And the boy, on average, my son is less mature than the average girl. And so he feels this, you know, when he gets to be in puberty years, he's feeling this enormous desire to be with at least 50% of the girls in his class. Uh-huh. And so he doesn't know what to do and how to behave with all this. And, you know, what should I advise my son? You know, and so that's the type of the challenge. And I hope that, you know, in the Boy Crisis book, I sort of talk about how you can use family dinner nights to constructively talk about these topics in a way that everybody at the family table has heard. And there are a lot of solutions, fortunately. But, you know, this is coming on us so quickly. And there's such a negativity toward men and masculinity, and, you know, our sons hearing the future is female,
right?
And, you know, reading books like The End of Men.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never in history had a time where someone was learning it's going to be the end of their gender.
Yes,
and this doesn't exactly inspire a boy to his life's journey.
We're going to be right back. More with Dr. Warren Farrell when we come back. Don't miss any of this great stuff on the eve of Father's Day. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
She dreams in color, she dreams in red. Can't find a better man. Can't find a better man.
Welcome back. Kate Daly Show, and so glad that you're joining us. I've got Dr. Warren Farrell with me. He has written so many wonderful books on this, and I really think, I mean, this is at a cost, because this has been a tough subject for people, especially a lot of women out there to hear, and that is, and I love the books, Why Men Earn More, and Women Can't Hear What Men Don't Say, and The Boy Crisis, and The Myth of Man. My gosh, we could have hours, Dr. Farrell, simply hours on this, on covering all of your books. I just love this. And I'm sure you've taken a few hits for writing so plainly about this and so honestly about it, I'm sure.
I feel I've been very, yes, I've had not a few hits, but maybe a few thousand hits.
Mm-hmm.
but I also feel privileged to be able to figure out a way of making a living saying the thing that comes, you know, nobody has the truth, but I try to say, follow the research and listen to people's hearts and families and breakdowns and what's bothering them and do the best that I can to, you know, to share not only what the problems are, but the causes and then also the solutions, and to make sense for people on the level of family and then the level of schools and then on the level of national policy. You know, I was out in Iowa this past weekend interviewing 11 of the presidential candidates and trying to introduce to the Democrats the concept of boys' issues and the importance of fathers, which is extremely hard for the Democrats to get. But then I was also in D.C. talking to 70 staff leaders of the U.S. Senate, the 70 staffers of the U.S. Senate, about that were all conservatives and Republicans and or libertarians, and they were about this issue. They got the importance of fathers and families much more quickly, and then went down to the Fatherhood Summit in Nashville and spoke to the first fatherhood conference in 14 years of, you know, with where, you know, faith-based leaders and people from all different fathers' organizations around the country came in to speak on the to listen to, you know, what I and others had to say about the importance of fathers, and particularly what was not understood was the exact things that fathers do that lead to children doing so much better. Very few. I think when we spoke last time, I was talking to you about the importance of roughhousing, and you know, that the fact that when, you know, when then dads and the kids are roughhousing, moms often look at, you know, the situation and they see that you know, that they feel like they have only, you know, like this is just one more child they have to monitor with the dads playing with the kids, and then, you know, then because dads aren't reading about this, and they can't explain to their wife in a loving way this roughhousing creates a bond. The bond allows them to enforce boundaries without resentment. When they enforce boundaries without resentment, the kids learn things like how not to push their sister aside with their elbow when they're roughhousing, and that if they do push their sister aside with their elbow again, that will be the end of the roughhousing for a day or two. And so that the next time they roughhouse and the dad says don't push your sister aside, that there's an incentive to not push his sister aside because he or she is going to lose the roughhousing if they do. And so they begin to learn empathy, not because children are naturally empathetic. They are not. They're naturally self-centered. But they become empathetic as a result of learning that it pays them by more roughhousing, for example, to be empathetic than it does if they're not empathetic and they lose what they want, the roughhousing.
So they're learning that lesson.
These types of things are all part of, you know, dad's 9 different styles of parenting that I ended up describing in the Boy Crisis book. Each has certain roles that 99% of dads don't even know, and so therefore they can't explain it well, and so moms often think that dads are just putting the kids in an unsafe situation, as opposed to that the kids are learning something about how to be assertive versus aggressive, how to be safe versus not safe, when to take risks and when not to take risks.
Oh, I love that. You got to get the book Boy Crisis if you're listening, because I think you're right. I think we just don't realize the lessons that are being taught that aren't overt. And so,
yes.
And so, you know, I think about this because you said something when you were talking, and that was that the women on the left have a really hard time hearing what you're saying. Conservatives grasp it a little bit easier, obviously. Why is that? What kind of power struggle are they in with themselves? What are they afraid of?
First of all, your description, power struggle that they're in with themselves, is really a good way of putting it. And that is, so my colleagues, when I was on the board of NOW in New York City, there was such an emphasis on women's freedom that when, you know, as soon as I started to say that women's freedom had to be limited once they made the free choice to have children, that was the end of their freedom and the beginning of responsibility coming before freedom and what was best for their children. That's what their free choice led them to do. That's the power struggle right there. It's like between I'm learning all these things that to be a feminist, it's about freedom, but it's also about you know, but once you take on that adult responsibility of a parent, it's also about responsibility. Of course, the same thing is true for men, but men also, men in particularly when there's a divorce, men oftentimes find that they have to fight for the right to be with the children.
Right.
And I do a lot of expert witness work around the country, and, you know, it's sort of like by the time the men get to me, they've already usually spent $150,000 on legal cases to be just for the right to be with their children. Well, that money should have been shared with the woman and the man for the children's college education, for, you know, special problems or special needs that they have, and it's being wasted on a fight to be to do what should be an assumption on a divorce, which is that you as parents need to figure out four things. If these are what I call the four must-dos of divorce, if your primary concern is your children. Number one is an equal amount of time with father and mother.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that dads and moms need to be within about 20 minutes drive time of each other, so the children don't resent going over to the other parent's home because they're missing activities or a friend's birthday party. Number three, that there's no bad mouthing from mom to dad or dad to mom. And number four, that the mother and father do consistent counseling or relationship or communication counseling, and not just emergency-based counseling. When children have those four things happening after divorce, they do a little bit worse than they do in an intact family, but they do not do disastrously as a rule.
Yeah, there's a lot of fathers really suffering out there that aren't allowed to be with their kids. And is it because the women, there's a lot of women out there that just think they know best, and that once they get divorced, they just want the kids to be theirs, and that they can do much better at everything. And I'm not quite sure where it's coming from, that part of
That's
it.
That's a lot of where it's coming from. There's a few things happening, and I want to make sure that we are clear that, you know, when the beginning of the feminist movement happened, there was a lot of, you know, men out there and women that said, you know, men know what the, you know, what the medical field needs, the law, the legal field needs. A woman can't be a pilot. A woman can't be this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people become territorial when it's their area of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so with women you have who are divorced, you have both that territoriality, and you also have oftentimes an anger that has built up during the marriage, and the woman wanting just to start her life over again. And, you know, I made a mistake. You know, I met a new man now, and he and I want to move away to a different state. He's got a good job there. I'll start over again. I don't want to be having to deal with the man I divorced every day. And I know what's best for the children. I'd rather have a child support check. You can help me that way, no problem. But I don't want you in my life every day reminding me of the mistake that I made. And so that's sort of basically the internal dialogue for the woman. And many of those women do know that probably the children need a dad, but they can't allow, and again, your point about the inner power struggle, that it's usually those first set of statements internally that preside or that trump the second set of internal thinking. And the fathers, but the children in the process are losing out on their dads. And, you know, it wasn't until I did the research for the Boy Crisis that I realized how much these children are suffering. These are where it's the dad-deprived boys that are our mass shooters. They're the boys committing suicide. They're the boys having drug addictions. The boys that are withdrawing into video games and into porn. These are almost all marked by dad deprivation.
Wow. Wow. Powerful. And I look at the dynamic that we're creating right now and that we're encouraging. And I feel like, just like on that clip with Ben Shapiro coming in, I don't know whether to open a door for a woman. I don't even know how to treat a woman anymore. I'm so afraid of offending. And so these little kids are seeing the fathers struggle with this, and the guys in our families struggle with this. They're struggling with it too, right? At school and everywhere else. They don't quite know what to do, because women and girls might get unhinged or might just be so offended at any little thing.
You're absolutely right. And so, for example, any mom that has a son who is, like, you know, in the beginning of puberty knows that, you know, she may have seen when she was, you know, dating, mm-hmm. That, you know, a guy would try to ply a woman with a drink or try to not pay attention to a no. Mm-hmm. But what she sees as a mother of a son is like, you know, my son is so sweet and he's so afraid to call Krista because he thinks Krista is going to reject him. Mm-hmm. So she begins to see the world differently through her son's eye about a, somebody that she's programmed biologically to protect. And now suddenly she sees his fragility, which she never saw with the adult man that was interested in her. And so that really is very helpful for a mom to see that sort of fragility. And but the boy, as she also sees, the boy goes into school, and, you know, and he's learning that in California, where I live, it is law that in college, if a boy asks out a woman on a date and or a girl on a date, and he reaches over to take her hand, and he doesn't say to her, "May I take your hand?" and she doesn't say, "Yes, you may." If he doesn't get that affirmative consent, then he can later at any point in time be accused of being a sexual harasser, which will lead to him, of course, being, you know, theoretically on trial, mm-hmm. but practically speaking, it means him being kicked out of school. Mm-hmm. And so that's in California, that's the law. In 26 other states, that's going through the legislatures at various states with various modifications. And so, but the atmosphere is mm-hmm. ubiquitous. That is, when a boy is learning that he's fearful, that if he goes, you know, he has these feelings inside of desire for about half the women in his class. Mm-hmm. But if he expresses those feelings by reaching out and taking her hand or asking her out, and he does it incorrectly, then he's afraid that he'll be considered a sexual harasser, or a date rapist at worst, mm-hmm. or alternatively, that if he doesn't move quickly enough, that the woman feels no energy for him, mm-hmm. and begins to laugh about other guys, that he's sort of a wimp. I do remember once when I was in college, and I asked a woman after a wonderful date if she would like to park, and she said to me, "Warren, you don't ask a woman if you'd like to park. You park. If I don't want to park, I'll let you know I don't want to park."
Gosh. And that's really, this is a struggle. When we come back, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, do the boys learn more from a mom telling them something or just watching their dad? Because it really kind of, after having this conversation with you, truly, as these boys are watching dad, that's how important watching dad is. Maybe those cues are a lot stronger than maybe mom even saying something. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show. More with Dr. Warren Farrell when we come back. He'll be speaking at Freedom Fest as well, if you're going to that. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
How did I get here? What have I done? When will all my hopes arise? How will I know when? When I look in my father's eyes.
Hi there, welcome back. I've got Dr. Warren Farrell with me, and he's written some tremendous books on men, on fathering, on boys. The Boy Crisis, his latest, that just barely came out. You've got to grab it, because those lessons that our dads and fathers can teach these boys are so needed and so necessary that I think it's just criminal to not have these men in these kids' lives, and they need to be. We have a huge crisis in this country right now with this, and we really need to pay attention to it. And I was asking you, Dr. Farrell, on the way out last break, was, you know, are they learning more from what they learn even through social cues and nonverbal everything from the dads more so than, say, a mom saying it?
Yes. Moms or dads saying to a child what to do is helpful. Mm-hmm. But actually, if it's followed, if the boundaries are not enforced, then it's actually damaging. So, for example, moms and dads tend to set boundaries the same way. They'll both say, "Sweetie, you can't have your ice cream until you can have your ice cream when you finish your peas." Mm-hmm. And children will, of course, test to see whether they can have as few peas as possible before they get their ice cream. The difference tends to be the way that moms and dads enforce boundaries. With the mom is more likely to say, The kid will say to mom, can I have my ice cream now? And she'll say, no. I said, you have to have it when you finish your peas. But I'll tell you what, if you have these many peas, let's say half the peas, then you can have your ice cream. Now the signal goes to the child, boy or girl. I can manipulate a better deal. So at the end of a quarter of the peas being finished, the child says, okay, I tried. I did the amount of peas you wanted. Mom will say, well, not quite, but you did try. And she thinks to herself in her mind, I'm not going to get into a big argument over a few peas. He at least tried, or she tried. Okay, sweetie, you can have your ice cream now. Dad is much more likely to say, excuse me, we have a deal here, and you know the deal, and I know the deal, and you know that I know the deal. You can have your ice cream until you finish your peas. Oh, you're so mean. Mommy doesn't do that. Well, you can continue saying I'm so mean, and then there'll be no ice cream tomorrow night either. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So the boy or girl learns that with Dad, it gets worse when I complain and try to manipulate. I'd better learn to focus on doing what I need to do in order to get what I want to have, the ice cream. So what the child is learning without knowing it with the dad is to have postponed gratification, to be able to not have that gratification of the ice cream until you do the things you need to do. With the mom, it's learning to do not postponed gratification, but immediate manipulation. So moms report having to say things over and over again, because when they do say something, the child learns that it's only a cue, it's only a negotiating position, and it's their job to negotiate. With dads, it's not nearly as much a negotiating position. He may negotiate at the beginning, but once he makes the decision, he says that goes. And so children, now here's where it really comes, the importance comes in. Children growing up, predominantly parented by dads, only 15% of them have ADHD. Children predominantly parented by moms, 30% have ADHD.
Wow.
And you can see why, with what I just explained, that the child with the mom learns that he doesn't have to focus his attention or her attention on doing what she or he needs to do. They can just get it. They can get sidetracked by better methods of manipulation and negotiation. With dad, the child has to focus the attention rather than having a deficit of attention. Right. And the importance of that is it leads to the slippery slope. When a child does not have postponed gratification, they can't finish their homework. They can't rehearse for an acting job because they don't have the discipline to do the rehearsal for that, or playing soccer and then learning all the rules of football or basketball. And so they have dreams, because moms are very good at helping the children dream and recognize the best parts of themselves. Dads are also good at that, sometimes not quite as good at that. But a dream that is not followed up by discipline becomes usually a disappointed dream. And then eventually I found that the children become afraid to dream.
Wow. What you said was just so powerful in understanding a father's role and respecting it. And a lot of women, and I can say this because I am one and I'm a mom, you get into momager mode. You're the manager of the family. You know best. You're around the kids more. And so a lot of women can tend to try to treat their husband as another one of the kids and manage everybody. And then mom always knows best. That isn't the case. The lessons that you just talked about are vital. And yet we women cater to one, the men cater to the other. God in all of his wisdom put us together to raise kids for a reason. And they have to get both sides of that, right? They have
You're exactly right. So, yes, just because I was just stressing the dad side, one of the things that I discovered in my research for the boy crisis is that it's that the children that do the best are ones that have what I call checks and balance parenting. The child says, Mom, can I climb the tree? Mom says, no, sweetie, maybe in a few years you can. Dad says, yes, you can go ahead and climb the tree. Wait a minute, I just said the opposite. And then the mother and father get into a disagreement or a discussion about that, and they come to a conclusion. Okay, Jimmy or Jane, you can climb the tree, but you can't go above a certain point, and you can't go out on these branches. And Dad, you want the, you know, the child to climb the tree, you get under the tree in case the child has a bad fall. Mm-hmm. And so, oh, by the way, give me the iPhone so you don't get distracted by that. And so the result is that the child has had some more opportunities to climb the tree, which now, what's the value of climbing the tree? Getting hurt, the mom might think. Mm-hmm. No, the value of climbing the tree is that the child begins to learn, his or her IQ increases by making constant decisions as to what is dangerous and what is not dangerous. What's the risk I should take? What's the risk I shouldn't take? That increases a child's IQ, increases a child's understanding of where risk-taking goes too far and yet where caution goes too far. These are things that develop our children's skill sets, and it's not from listening to anybody. It's from having the experience. The best things that children do is to have an experience with a parent, an experience that, let's say, they go out camping or hiking, and you let the child go off a little bit on his or her own, but you sort of know what the parameters are. You let the child go too far, and you can put the child in danger position, but you don't let the child go far enough, and you don't teach the child how to take risks, how to explore, how to fall and hurt themselves, which a certain amount of that is okay, but too much is not okay.
Right.
And that's where that combination of checks and balance parenting comes in. That's the benefit to the children.
So in a world where we're told that women are superior now and men are stupid, because that's the byline in movies, it's the byline on every TV show, the dad is the dumb one, and everyone else knows better than the dad. And then we've dialed him down to just provider, give me the paycheck and that's it. Because all of these things that you're talking about are so vital to this kid growing up, to this kid understanding who he is, having their value, understanding of themselves, and making a really good human being, not to mention that too. We women really need to learn a big lesson, and that is to be a respecter of fatherhood in general.
Yes. Be a respecter of fatherhood, even as you make sure you articulate what you feel is best for the child on your side of the greater likelihood to protect, greater likelihood to nurture. Those types of things are built into mom's propensities and as the hormones change when the child is born. And so that needs to be heeded as well. And so the most important single thing, the reason I started teaching couples communication workshops around the country is because I started seeing that the boy crisis happens very frequently when there's divorces and there's minimal father involvement. Divorces happen because the Achilles heel of all human beings is our inability to handle personal criticism without becoming defensive. And so I've developed a way of getting couples to be able to hear personal, what would normally be interpreted as personal criticism, but instead of interpreting it that way, they learn to interpret it as a new opportunity to be loved in a different way. And so they are able to hear what their partner's differences are, and then their partner has a chance to express their differences and be heard without being interrupted. And how to take that type of learning. So the important thing there is that when mother and father know how to communicate, they're much less likely to get a divorce. Many people, you know, do stay together for the children, but the children experience that, you know, the parents may not be legally divorced, but they're psychologically divorced, or worse yet, they're in a minimum security prison marriage. And, you know, and that doesn't encourage the children to feel excited about getting married.
Yeah, and men need to keep fighting for their kids, even if they're not allowed to parent, even if that woman thinks that she's all powerful and can do it on her own and doesn't need the guy to be part of their lives. They still need to fight. The kids need to see them fighting still.
The kids, yes, what you're saying here is extremely important. I was sharing with you on break that, you know, I do a lot of expert witness work around the country to help children have both parents. But one of the things that is disappointing is that the legal system, the judges, the family court system is very biased against dad involvement, especially if moms say anything about fearing being with the dad or, you know, something along those lines. And so the dads oftentimes feel extremely depressed, some suicidal, and they say to me, I just tried my hardest, And I say, if they do lose the opportunity to be equally involved with their child, I say, don't do it. Don't say it necessarily now. But when the child gets to be the appropriate age and you feel she or he is mature enough to understand it, let your child know that you are fighting to be, that you fought and you are fighting to be involved with him or her. And you hired lawyers to help you do that. And you did run out of money, but you wanted to have some place for them to live. Let them know they were wanted by you. And that isn't that won't solve the problem completely. But one of the things that haunts children the most when they don't see their father is that, what did I do wrong? Why did Dad abandon me? Mm-hmm. Why is the half of me that is my dad, I'll repeat that last part, why, as they look in the mirror, they see the half of themselves that has the body language and the hair of their dad, let's say, and they feel that the half of me that is my dad, why doesn't he love me? Why did he abandon me? Why didn't he fight for me? So he does need to, for you, children need for you to walk a fine line between letting them know that you fought for them without poisoning the children about their mom.
I love what you just said. Boy, I love what you just said. I know a lot of people out there are nodding. These are huge, huge lessons that really can improve our lives right now. And I really feel like we women need to make sure that it's a partnership. It's a partnership, and it's a partnership for a reason. We bring different skills to the table, and women don't always just know best and have it all figured out. And I feel like they need to be that respecter of the husbands and fathers in their homes. And then the kids see that, right? The kids see that relationship.
Absolutely. And the children... There's aside from good communication, and when you have that willingness and ability to hear your partner's differences, which is not easy, by the way, because the more we, you know, some people say, well, it's all about love. You just need to love your partner. Absolutely not true. Right. The more you love your partner, the more vulnerable you feel. The more vulnerable you feel, the more anger, disagreement, criticism hurts. And so the more defensive you become. So you, biologically, we are programmed. When we hear something that is criticism, we are programmed to become defensive because it could have been an enemy that was criticizing us. And so it paid to be defensive in order to survive. Right. But in order to love, people, your partner needs to feel heard, not defended against, not for you to be preparing your story, your defense while your partner is talking. Mm-hmm. And so these are skill sets that are not biologically available to us until we do something that is unnatural, which is to learn to listen to our partner, even though we are feeling attacked, even though we are not being attacked. Usually the person doing the, quote, criticism doesn't perceive herself or himself as a criticizer. Right. They see themselves as a person making a suggestion for new ways of being intimate or more effective as parents. Mm-hmm. But any person listening to that who is asked to make any change in behavior or attitude experiences that as criticism.
Right. So it's so true.
That's the starting point of disaster.
I wish we had another hour. I know men are very direct. I also know that women try to turn men into women, and we shouldn't want to, by the way. We should probably want to address and learn how they respond to things. They're very direct. We're not. And I also think that kids growing up with both parents see all the differences and understand and can understand those differences better and respect them. And I love that. I love what you have to say. The Boy Crisis, get the book. Dr. Warren Farrell, thank you for chiming in on this Father's Day Eve so that we can talk some sense about men and fatherhood. I really appreciate all your efforts.
Well, thank you for your integrity, the way you ask questions, the way you listen. You're just a blessing.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Farrell. All right, we'll be right back. We'll take your calls. I want to hear what you have to say about fatherhood, masculinity, all of it. When I come back, 888-673-1450. Be right back.